Blog Talk Radio.
You are muted.
Hello. Welcome to hashtag My Investing Story. We are here with a special guest, Eve Lewis. But before we get started, my name is Ione, also known as Ione McNeil. I am flying solo today. I do not have my co-host, Ms. Ann McNeil, on. So before we get started, just to give you a quick background, My Investing Story is a podcast and it's an outreach effort to let people hear other regular people's stories about how they became successful long-term investors. Ms. Ann and I and many of our guests are members of Better Investing, also known as NAIC. We were established over 70 years ago in 1951, and we're a national 501c3 nonprofit organization that has helped more than 5 million people from all walks of life learn how to improve their financial future. We provide unbiased investment education, and we do that through a number of tools and through our Better Investing magazine. So this is also a disclaimer that this session is for informational and educational purposes only, and that we are not making any stock recommendations or giving stock tips or any of that sort. So with that, hello, Eve.
Hello, Ione. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. How are you?
I'm doing great. We've got some spring-like weather here in Cincinnati.
Okay. Are you originally from Cincinnati?
I am not. I'm originally from southeastern Michigan in the area called the Thumb. But I have lived here in Cincinnati for, I think it's now close to 40 years. So, you know, there is that sort of Michigan and Ohio rivalry. So I'm on both. I have one foot in each side.
Okay, cool. So just to give people a quick background of you, Eve has served on the Better Investing Board of Directors since 2008, and as we now call you, the vice chair, since you just finished your term as chair. But Eve has been a member of Better Investing for over 30 years and is an advocate for personal financial security and believes everyone can manage a successful portfolio by deploying the Better Investing principles. She holds a BS and MS in business education from Northern Michigan. Eve, talk to us a little bit about your first memories and experiences of money, how you kind of learned how to manage money way before you started learning how to invest.
Well, I grew up on a farm, and my parents were very thrifty. I have three siblings, two older brothers and a younger sister. And I look back and think we had everything we needed provided by my parents, but the things we wanted, we had to buy on our own. And living on a farm, there's no shortage of chores. So not being able to earn money was no excuse. And one of my earliest memories is making 50 cents an hour. So I guess you could say I also learned the value of what a dollar could buy. So I did start earning money quite young. And when I was in high school, I took business classes. And so once I developed some typing and communication skills, I moved off the farm or moved my jobs took me other places than the farm. But I really value my farm background, and the farm is still in existence today. And actually my nephew and his family who live in our family home, he is the fifth generation farmer in our family.
Oh, wow.
So I'm quite proud of it.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Talk to us about maybe some specifics around the savings habit that you probably developed, you know, while being mm-hmm. on the farm growing up, mm-hmm. you know, having to really utilize the resources that did come your way.
Well, I guess I would say once, again, I think with as most young people or kids, when they start earning money, they may have a goal of something they want. And so, you know, you keep the cash on hand and, you know, you spend it when you have it. And I guess it was later on when I really started getting a paycheck, and I probably got a paycheck when I was 16 years old, as a lot of my, you know, friends back at that time, you know, really started working then. So I would have had a savings account and, you know, keep some cash, put the rest in the bank.
Well, that's one thing that one of the main reasons I wanted to bring you on as a guest. We're jumping kind of near the end, but I want to lead up to it.
Sure.
Is because after you became a widow, mm-hmm. better investing played such a major role in giving you hope, stabilizing your new life, and providing a lot of benefits you knew you would get, like, you know, investment education, but also some other benefits such as community and camaraderie. But I do want to ask you a dated question around, you know, coming up the way you did, like you said, getting your first job at 16, getting married, having kids, being a woman during that time. What was your personal view on money and responsibility for yourself? And let's just take it as a newlywed, you know, with your husband. Did you talk about marriage? I'm not marriage, but did you talk about, you know, finances before you got married? Did you divvy things up? I think it'll be interesting to hear kind of, you know, your perspective at that point in your life.
Well, thank you. We of course did talk about money because we wanted to buy a house. We were a little older when we got married, and you know, we talked about budget. What could we afford? We didn't want to be house poor. We talked about while we would have two incomes, really kind of living off one income and either saving or investing the rest. My husband was a teacher, so he was eligible for a 403B. I worked in industry, so I had a 401K. And, you know, we learned at the time, and I'm really glad we did. Of course, I got a match, but I also maxed what I could do each year. And, you know, the other thing I think we've got to remember about, you know, contributing, you know, we're always contributing so that we would grow our nest egg. Well, it's also a benefit to defer taxes annually. You know, it brings down, you know, the amount, of course, each year, you know, because it's deferring the tax. Of course, later on, you know, you will be taking the tax, or you will be paying tax when you start taking the required minimum distribution or more, but that will be when you are at a lower tax rate because you're retired and you're, you know, not, you would not have as much income.
Right. Talk to us about, you know, at that time, you know, your hopes and dreams as a couple, because I think sometimes people don't know how to talk about money because they weren't around people that talked about money. A lot of times the most we hear at home is go to school, get a good education, get a good job, make sure you pay your bills on time. And that's the extent. You know, you would probably have to run into somebody to say, hey, make sure you contribute to your retirement account. Right now, people are talking about make sure you have an emergency fund. What kind of allowed you and your husband at that time to even be aware, but you also said you're kind of older, but be aware of let's talk about retirement, let's contribute to retirement. Because as you know, a lot of people don't think about retirement until it's, you know, 10, 15 years away.
Well, I think part of it had to do with the fact that I was a business teacher and I worked in business publishing. So I was familiar with, even though retirement at that time seemed so far off in the future. And if people, younger people can't think about retirement, where I try to sell them is the tax advantage. You know, put money away. It will lower your taxes. So try to go about it that way. But I also was intrigued about investing in stocks. Of course, I didn't grow up that way. I think my family had a healthy respect for the stock market, but their profits went into livestock, went into purchasing equipment. And I was going to mention that later too, as I started my own portfolio, I would follow agriculture stocks because I felt I had maybe a little more knowledge about that industry. And I was, you know, interested in companies that served agriculture. And as you know, it is a huge industry. But where I got my start was while I was working, I became acquainted with a gentleman in a professional organization that I belonged to for business teachers. He was an entrepreneur, and he was very successful. And he and several other local businessmen in Flint, Michigan, started a bank. And it was public. And I thought, well, he is a successful businessman, so I'm expecting the bank to be successful. And fortunately, it was. And unfortunately for me, because that was pre-better investing principles, you know, I did pretty well. But I didn't do, you know, that was before I knew how to do an SSG and how to evaluate stocks. However, I guess I can say that one of our standards is good management. You know, we want to buy companies with good management. So I can check that box, but I was lucky. And what I felt was a barrier to investing was not, you know, on top of not really knowing, you know, how to evaluate stocks at that time, over 30 years ago, of course, to make trades, you had to spend $40 or $50 to buy and to sell. So that meant, you know, oftentimes we were buying in round lots, 100 shares. You had to buy enough shares to make it worthwhile. So I always felt, you know, I felt, you know, I really had to think long and hard if I was going to buy something. So around that time, I saw an article in the Cincinnati Inquirer, and the headline said, buy stocks without paying commission. And so that got my attention. And it also, you know, was very enlightening because it talked about the educational focus of better investing. At that time, of course, it was National Association of Investors Corporation. And I think it gave the address and how to join. So I joined the organization, and that really got me on the road to learning about stock investing. At that time, I did not belong to a club and did not think I could because I had a very busy life as a wife, mother, and I traveled quite a bit for my work. So I, you know, really self-educated myself from the publications by Better Investing and attending the chapter events. Here in Cincinnati, our local chapter is OKI, Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. Very active, you know, very dedicated chapter officers and board. So I went to training, and of course, back at that time, it was paper and pencil. But you know, I stuck with it, and you know, I feel that I have been successful and learned a lot, continue to learn a lot, and really think the Better Investing online tools are fantastic. And now using technology with the webinars and, you know, different, you know, regularly scheduled webinars such as Stock Up and Ticker Talk, you know, I just really enjoy. And it motivates me to do more research and select stocks, challenge some of the stocks I might have in my portfolio and then, you know, investigate others.
You know, one of the things I liked about what you brought to light, and I didn't realize this was a part of your start, but you actually started like most people do, which is based on somebody you know that's doing it. So you happen to have met a successful businessman who ended up being, you know, in industry in a sense. And was it from his recommendation how you got started in investing?
No, he really didn't recommend it.
Okay.
He didn't necessarily recommend it. He was just, you know, talking about what he was doing.
What he was doing. Okay.
He owned a couple of successful businesses related to education. And so, you know, I think it was a case of, you know, he was so successful, he needed somewhere else to invest his money.
Okay.
And
okay.
So, cool. So I owned that stock was sold several times and I stuck with it for a long period of time. And finally, I sold it a couple of years ago when it became Huntington Bank. I mean, it was a smaller bank.
Okay.
Small chain of banks in Michigan.
Okay. Okay, excellent. Talk to us about thing within your family. So, you know, you were married, and I did want to, if you can explain what house poor is, because I think it's a term we know, but if you're listening, you may not know. And I think right now in this market.
Oh, I think, it'd be very difficult. And trying to avoid being house poor. Well, it means really extending yourself to the maximum. I mean, somebody must be willing to give you a mortgage, but at that rate. But it is saying, you know, that you have dedicated a very high percentage of your salary to your mortgage, and that you can probably barely cover your other minimum needs. And what it sets you up for is if you have an emergency, you know, I mean, it's if you're kind of living hand to mouth each month, making the mortgage payment and covering your other expenses, then you probably are not saving. If you're not saving, at least for your emergency, then you probably don't have any kind of little revenue stream to fund your investments. So, you know, trying to advise somebody to say, you know, try to get a reasonably whether it's a priced house or mortgage or whatever, where you're not committing such a high percentage of the income
of your
that you
income
have. But I think, you know, in today's market, I think probably because of the prices, it's very, very, you know, I wouldn't judge anybody on it because it's very difficult to find reasonably priced housing. And I know a lot of people are selling their homes because of the high prices, but then I'd say, well, where are you going?
You know? Exactly. I know, few people in that situation right now.
So it's it's an awareness, it's an individual choice. That would be my recommendation is try, and it goes back to try to live within your means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't overextend.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, my husband and I, basically lived on one of our salaries because, again, during that period of time, we didn't know if one of us would lose our job. And I think that's what, today's people have, people who are considering committing to a mortgage, what would happen if you had half your income?
Right. And I like what you brought up because it means that even back then, you and your husband were doing contingency planning. You had two incomes, but even in an all is well world, you were saying, hey, mm-hmm. let's live off of one. Mm-hmm. Let's live within our means mm-hmm. and let's dream. Mm-hmm. Dream to put our children in college. Let's dream to retire comfortably and start to fund our dreams with that other income, correct?
Correct. And that's right. And getting to that, when you were asking about what else did, my husband and I plan or what did we see in the future? And that was certainly it, to be able to fund our children's college education. And, with the higher price, I think, I can look back. I'm going to say I started college going to be 50 years ago, but it's a cost when most state universities received a lot more funding from the state. My brother, sister, and I, we could basically pay for our college education with our nest egg that we started with before college, and then working during college and working during the summer. And
right.
knowing
right.
that my kids, they're college graduates now, they worked during that period of time that was, to fund their expenses and so on. But, my husband and I wanted to be able to pay for tuition and room and board. And that's what my portfolio basically funded. When I started my own personal portfolio, and that was, I'd say, my nest egg, not having to pull money out of other investments, our retirement investments. So that's where I started that. And fortunately had enough of a head start, and my kids were spaced out far enough where that's when I would sell the stock. I'm basically a buy and hold person. And again, I think for a busy person, I was thinking about, as you wondered, some barriers for people not getting into the market. They think it's, a lot of work. It's a lot to stay up on top of and follow. And, I'd like to say that if you buy a good quality stock, you can, I don't want to say forget about it, but
You
can sleep easy and know that, there are going to be ups and downs, but, there are good solid stocks where, I think there's a quote by Warren Buffett who said, if you're not willing to hold a stock for 10 years, don't think about, buying it, don't hold it for 10 minutes or,
mm-hmm.
Something like that. So, I'm probably, now that I have a little bit more time, I am probably doing more research and evaluating my holdings a little more carefully, although I'm not sure I'm any more successful than I was when I bought and hold and sold when I had a big ticket item that I wanted to pay for.
Right. Let's if you don't mind, let's get into actually some specifics. Not that it has to be too specific, whatever you feel comfortable with.
Sure.
Because I think that as people listen, it's one thing to get concepts generally, but it's another thing to know exactly what that person did. So we know that you lived off of one income and did things with the rest. So was the second income maxing out the retirement accounts for both of you? Was it also investing in the brokerage account? What did it open up any 529 plans? I mean, in terms of specific accounts, and then we'll talk about the purposes of those accounts.
Sure. We both, my husband and I both, through our, payroll, funded 403B to the max. I funded 401K to the max.
And when you say the max, you mean the maximum contribution, not just the maximum that the employer maxes.
Right, right. The maximum contribution, right.
Okay. Excellent.
And right. And so I did that in knowing too that we were never going to touch that money. And as you know, there are opportunities to borrow from those accounts and so on, but there's, you know, kind of a heavy penalty, or it's just more complicated. And plus, if you do borrow from those accounts, you're not making money there. You know, it's not invested.
So you had those two retirement accounts, and then what other accounts were you funding?
Then my portfolio.
Within a brokerage account.
Within a brokerage account, right.
Okay. And now...
I should back up and say, small in a brokerage account. My portfolio, the early part of it, was funded through the low-cost plan, which was dollar-cost averaging.
Okay.
And that's what NAIC provided, was the opportunity to purchase one share stock and then set up the account. And then through the companies, at the end of the month, when I paid my bills, if I had a couple hundred dollars left over, I would send them to those individual companies, and I would be buying shares of stock at the market.
Okay.
So that was the dollar cost averaging concept.
Plan, right,
right.
Right. Okay.
You know, and now that plan isn't available anymore, but fortunately, we can
do the same thing
with no cost brokers.
Exactly, exactly. Yes. And that's what we were doing back then.
Yes.
So thank you to Better Investing for providing that for us.
Right, right.
Yeah, I have to back up to give people a little bit of a perspective, because even in listening to this story, my first thoughts are, what even gave you this advantage, right? Because there has to be something going on in terms of either access to information or to people or to experiences that would even allow you to say to yourself, I have a job. My husband has a job. Let's not just contribute to the max, which is what a lot of people who are scared to invest do. Or I'll just contribute up to my employer's contribution. No, you all said, let's contribute to the max. And this is 30, 40 years ago,
at least 35 years ago.
Yeah, this is before media outlets were talking about investing. This is when generally a lot of people were afraid to invest. So, you know, was it because you went to school and got a business degree? Was it because you worked for Cengage and worked in business education publishing? Was it that exposure to this realm that made you even more comfortable with investing? Because is all of this, let's say the maxing out of your retirement accounts, was that before you joined Better Investing or after?
I think it was right around the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, right around the same time.
So you joining Better
Investing. And trying to read everything. Uh-huh.
You joining Better Investing really allowed you to learn about the concepts of not just contributing to your retirement, but maxing it out and other things.
Right.
Because I'm just trying to draw that.
Sure.
Link.
Well, they think of the columnists, you know, there's regular retirement columnists in the magazine.
The Better
in
Best
different
magazine.
Yes. And different features and so on. And reading the Wall Street Journal, reading, the publications. And again, that's 30, 40 years ago, retirement seems so very far off, but it's not. And that's what I, tell my children, tell my nieces and nephews, you turn around and you're retired. And I certainly, wanted to have a comfortable retirement. And in the part of investing too, that I, preach to my relatives and the younger people is when you have, when you have a comfortable investing portfolio, what the proceeds provide for you is security. Security is freedom. And that's what I really like. I like to be in this position where I am debt-free and I have a secure position. And two, early on in this investing
journey
and road, knowing that, you're not trading, you're not playing the market. And I can remember when I first met Beth Hamm, George Nicholson's daughter, who was on our board, and I was working with her in youth investing, and somebody once said something about playing the market, and she said, we do not play the market. We are investors. So, getting that, clear right away that, by educating ourselves and by surrounding ourselves with other like-minded people to share what we've learned, what we continue to learn, puts us in a position where, financial security is freedom. And I can't emphasize that enough. And, again, people think like it's, isn't that really hard to get there? And, I just say live within your means. Don't overspend. Do your homework. But I don't want to, I don't think we should be get analysis paralysis. I mean, I think, we have to get the best information we have and go with it. But I think the community of people that we associate with have been, very helpful. And I feel, in the position of serving on the board and other various activities with Better Investing is a way I can give back to the organization that helped me achieve security.
Wow. And when you talked about security, it actually made me think, did you feel secure before you retired when you were, living below your means, mm-hmm. saving and investing? Because I know for mm-hmm. a lot of people, it's a huge jump to investing. Because investing and security usually don't go hand in hand, and for people that really want to feel safe, they save a lot and or they buy insurance, life insurance or mm-hmm. term insurance, whole life or term insurance. But can you talk about how in your investment education journey, you actually learned how successful long-term investing can provide real security?
I think, again, with when I was younger, I knew older people who were associated with Better Investing and members and so on. And I could see, I'm doing the same thing they did. And, they've reached a degree of success. And I think, again, being in the market for the long term and not trying to time the market, invest regularly. The Better Investing principles, by exercising those. And again, to back to the how do you feel secure? How can you pull the trigger and make an investment? I would encourage everybody who's considering this to join a club, join an existing club. And
investment club.
Yes, that's what I mean, an investment club. You can learn from the local chapter. You can start a club with friends, relatives, any number of, people who are associated. So you share the work, you share the responsibility, and pool your money. So I think most people who are in clubs have their own portfolio too. And sometimes the club, maybe the club has all different securities than you have in your portfolio, but I bet there's a lot of crossover, as stocks are presented in the club for investment. We really analyze it. The person who makes the presentation is selling it. And, I have learned certainly about a lot of companies from my investment partners. And, and I've brought stocks that, interested me to the club. So it's a real good give and take of information. And then the other thing too is attending the Better Investing National Convention. And there's a lot of training sessions as evaluating stocks.
No, I was just going to say a quick plug. You brought it up. So this year's Better Investing National Convention is going to be in Dallas, at the Westin Dallas, June 23rd to the 26th. If you want more information about that, please visit betterinvesting.org. Again, that's betterinvesting.org. And if you are not yet a Better Investing member, feel free to go to betterinvesting.org, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you will see the free 90-day trial. And when you sign up, please visit some of the investment clubs. We call them model investment clubs because they are investment clubs that are sponsored by our local Better Investing chapters. And they are free and open to the public without, prior invitation. This is an open invitation for anybody, whether you're a Better Investing member or not, to come and what I like to call be a fly on the wall. Visit an investment club and see how do they run their investment club? How do they make their investment decisions? If you want to know anything about Better Investing, even if you don't want to sign up for the free 90-day trial, we have free online events, either nationally or through our local chapters. Visit a workshop, visit an online training, visit our website and check out some of our investment education articles, or even watch some of our free educational videos. And, really get a sense of the community of Better Investing and why we've been the leading nonprofit investment education organization for over 70 years. So since you brought up BINC, I just wanted to make that plug. And I also, for those who are listening live, Better Investing is hosting their Stock Up session tomorrow, March 3rd, how to use qualitative factors in fundamental analysis. I think that, is an interest for a lot of people that want to up their fundamental game, within investment and their investing strategy. So, back to you. I want to say, though, Eve, one thing that I really and getting from you, especially in this last part that you shared, is just how important mentors, role models, and community is.
Absolutely.
Because you said something really key, which was, I saw other people doing it. I saw older BI members who were able to invest regularly. And what I like to say is invest $25 a month within an investment club and, you know, end up a millionaire. And it's not because they had high paying jobs. It wasn't because they were entrepreneurs. It wasn't because they worked 60 to 80 hours a week. It was simply because they came together, invested mm-hmm. a small amount of money, learned together, and applied that knowledge to really become investors, to become financially free and financially independent.
Exactly. And I think the other way we can look at it is, you know, it's a, most of us, I mean, that's the beauty, I think, of membership in Better Investing. You meet people from all walks of life. And, you know, we all have, you know, a lot of differences, you know, and geographic differences, you know, our careers are different, you know, where we came from, what our backgrounds, levels of education and so on. But the one thing I think we had, and maybe we didn't even know it at the time, but then learned, we all, you know, most of us worked and had jobs. And so we were earning the money. Now it's time to have the money work for us. And I think that's what we can say is, you know, the increase in value, the dividends, the total return, that's putting our money to work for us. And, you know, and again, I think, you know, Better Investing has always been very patriotic. And, you know, we say, let's own a piece of America, invest in America. And I think at different times, people have said to me, how can you stay motivated to do this? You know, why do you keep doing it? And I said, I like to learn about companies. You know, being in Better Investing really keeps you on top of technology. Maybe you don't have a great depth of it, but, you know, sometimes I think you feel like when you're, I retired about 5 years earlier than you know, most people do, because I was in a position I could. But one thing I was, you know, a little bit concerned with is, am I going to kind of get out of touch with the business world? Am I, you know, but when you are searching for new stocks and you have to make stock reports, I think you are more on top of emerging companies and emerging markets. And I feel more with it when I talk to my kids, you know? And so I enjoy that. And, you know, and another, I'd say, benefit of following the market and making presentations and evaluating, I feel that I was a more valuable employee because I had to make proposals, business proposals for new publishing programs to our senior management. And I felt on par with our finance people because I could read, you know, financial statements and P&Ls and return on investment and,
right.
And a lot of things.
And
yeah.
All of that.
Yeah. And all of that. And, you know, so I think it really helped me. And I think another advantage is too, you know, for others who maybe they don't necessarily want to manage a portfolio or make the trades, and maybe somebody in their family or another friend is their financial advisor. Well, I think it equips you to be able to converse and understand and ask really good questions of financial advisors.
Yeah. Well, I have two things as we start to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going back to the just the specifics, you know, you were able, because you started investing earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Early is relative. And I'm going to say investing aggressively. And I have to use that word because right now, people who don't know how to invest or know the language or I'll say the vocabulary of investing, when they sit down with a financial planner or a a benefits person, when they're signing up for their company's 401k, they're going to be have some things put in front of them. And the only words they're going to hear is, you want to be in this conservative option or you want to be in this aggressive option. And when I was talking to Doug on the show, you know, I said it just recently dawned on me that that language of conservative versus aggressive is misleading.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm. And really only within, well, from my perspective, only within the Better Investing community, shout out to Howard Johnson, who's like, hey, I've been 100% in equities since I was 60 years old. And within the world of finance or financial advisors, that's unheard of. That's unrecommended, you know, but we have a very different perspective on what aggressive really is, what risk really is, and how we mitigate our risk. So I did want to do that, you know, quick plug to help people just understand how language can be, especially within finance and investing, dig below the word if you can. You know, be willing to ask questions and ask people to explain more.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if a Better Investing member is using the word risk, I guarantee you it's different than your financial advisor. If a Better
right.
Investing member is using the word growth and value, it's probably going to be different than a financial planner or a financial advisor. So I just, you know, wanted to plug that in there to encourage people not to get frustrated, but to realize that as they start to learn, you're going to realize that there are different sources and you can interpret the information differently, and Better Investing really helps equip you to go into any space, whether it be cryptocurrency, trading, long-term investing, commodities, and at least know what questions to ask.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I agree. And again, we're learning all the time, and I'm you know, thinking of, you know, being a novice and when you're first getting, you know, some experience, and by having, I think, some successful experiences and meeting, you know, again, talking about all the people that you can meet all over the country and at the national convention. And now with online clubs, you know, you can be a member of a club with people from all over the United States. And that's something else that, you know, I really enjoyed at the national convention, is at the meal function, going and sitting at a table with people I've never met before, and then talking about, you know, where they're from. So, you know, what are the leading companies in your area? You know, what are the industries? I bet your club invests in some of these local companies because they know them. And of course, and with pride, they talk about, you know, the different companies that are located in their state or in their home area. And, you know, it's just, you know, really interesting to get a variety of, you know, information and, you know, sources of new companies.
Well, one of the things I wanted, these are the last two things I wanted to talk about. The first one is going back to this brokerage account, right?
Uh-huh.
After you and your husband have maxed out your retirement account, you started buying from companies directly at that time through Better Investing's low-cost investment plan. But that was a program that utilized the investor relations department of many of our corporate partners, allowing people to buy at least one share of stock directly from the company. Okay, that's done. Talk to us about getting those statements, seeing what compound interest really was, having that experience. And if you want to share, you know, fine, if not, about, let's say, one company that you started with and over the lifespan of your children, 17, 18 years, that you sold to pay for or at least contribute greatly to their college education? And did you buy those stocks for that intended purpose? Like, did you start investing for their college when they were born, or was it kind of sometime after when you realized, oh, I probably should start growing the money to really pay for their college?
Right. I think, you know, it's when they were, you know, probably under 10. You know, they were young. They were young, but started the fund. And two, I did do 529s also. But at that time, you were really limited
in your options.
In the options. And, you know, at that time, I think CDs were paying, I don't know, 4 or 5%. So I think that was one of the options. And again, because I had other, you know, my low-cost plans that were starting to build up. But, you know, if you're talking about, well, what were some of the companies that I invested in and to the mergers and acquisitions and what where they went through was Texaco became Chevron. That was one. Upjohn, which became Pharmacia, that later became Pfizer. So, yeah, and I think any, you know, long-term investor with, you know, in investment clubs have started, you know, with one company and then, you know,
gone
through many ownerships and iterations.
Yeah, I had that happen when I bought Tricon Global through the Better Investing Low Cost Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Tricon Global was a three-company spinoff from Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I bought it after they spun off, which was Tricon Global. And then now they are, I forget the name, but Tricon was like KFC, Pizza Hut, and Long John Silver. And then
wait,
now
wasn't
it
Yum Brands.
Now it's Yum Brands. Yeah. So we definitely, you know, as long-term investors have experienced that kind of, you know, you start with one great company and then what happens with an acquisition or a merger. And I'm glad you said that you started investing for your children's education when they were under 10, because I think that that really puts it in perspective, you know, and is an encouragement to parents of middle schoolers or elementary schoolers or preschoolers to say, hey, you know, because really that only leaves a runway of, you know, 8 to 10 years.
Well, you know, I think most people think, I don't really know what a lot of other people have done, but, you know, you save a certain amount every month. What are you going to do? Leave it in a savings account? You know, I mean,
when you don't know anybody.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just can't do that. One of the things I wanted to mention, I was, you know, again, thinking of, you know, the discussion we're going to have tonight, and something new that I did this year that I had not done before. And in the, whether it's the psychological feeling you get from it, I gifted some shares of stock to, you know, it was a philanthropic effort.
Okay.
So it would be appreciated shares of stock.
Okay.
And
how was that?
It worked out great. And in fact, it was to Better Investing. You can go online and gift shares of stock. And so I wanted to give back to Better Investing. But it's interesting the feeling that you get when you, you know, I looked at, you know, one of my favorite stocks. And it's appreciated. And so, you know, I kind of had a number in mind. And so I, you know, the shares that day. And so, you know, instead of writing a check, it's, you know, it's like taking the house money and, you know, sending it off for to benefit someone else.
How did it make you feel?
That's it. I mean, it made me feel really great. It's a better feeling than writing a check.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that's personally.
Because a check is just the money, but the stock is going to grow even more. Is that
right? Well, the organization can decide to sell it. They can decide to do whatever. But I just felt like, you know, this is what I learned by being a member. So I'm paying back through doing this. So that's just a little, you know, personal, anecdote.
New experience. I'm glad you shared it, because I think, you know, one thing I've learned, and I'm really living this now, is that when you've been a successful long-term investor, you have options available to you that you probably never thought would or could be options. Like, for example, you know, you mentioned being able, to retire early, being able to pay for your grandkids' college education and leave them with no student debt, be able to contribute charitably, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm in this space now where it's like a lot of these things are possible, and I didn't start investing with those things in mind. I just started it because I didn't want to work that hard for the money. I mean, to be honest, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But it really is a very new mindset, and I think reality that I'm learning to live in, because not just when you have money do you have options, but when you've really learned how money works and how you can make money grow or allow it to grow by making good and better decisions, it's just a whole different reality than a lot of times what we're raised to do, which is work hard every day on the farm and till the soil, or, you know, go to work every day and get the check. It's a whole different way. Talk a little bit about, you know, your new kind of lived reality, being retired, you know, and what kind of words of guidance or encouragement would you give widows? Because we didn't get too much about that in your story.
Yeah.
But, you know, you became a widow in about 2008. And I think the benefit, you know, having heard your story now, you were actually an active participant in money and investing, or finance, you know, the family's finances and investing before your husband died. And so talk a little bit about that transition, and then talk about, you know, how you're mm-hmm. living now.
Well, yes. And I should have said that early on, is that my husband and I, you know, did talk about sort of what our philosophy was about, you know, working, spending, saving, and we weren't extravagant, but yet we did not, you know, skimp when there were certain things that we wanted to do, and we felt fortunate about it. And again, I sort of wanted to manage the money, and he was fine with that. And when I was purchasing stock and other things I did, we'd always discuss it, and he, you know, he'd say, oh, that's fine. So he really did not, he had confidence, and I think, you know, our accounts showed, you know, we were doing quite well. So he was happy to do other things. And so he was, after 25 years of marriage, he was diagnosed with an aggressive cancer. And so from diagnosis, he died a year later. And, you know, certainly it's something that you don't expect from otherwise healthy people, but it happens to people all the time. And I, you know, also say that, you know, I was really fortunate to be in the position when he did die. My youngest daughter was still in college. And, you know, I still had, you know, would have some expenses to pay, but not having any financial worry when you're grieving and going through, you know, with children, losing a parent, you know, there's different things that you want to do together and you know, help ease the grief. You know, it was actually parents or moms of some of my daughter's friends said, oh my gosh, it just occurred to me, if something happened to my husband, I don't know what I'd do. I would be, you know, they were financially insecure. And, you know, I just felt like, you know, I was just very fortunate to be in that situation. And the other thing, I was very fortunate to be invited to join the Better Investing Board right about that time. You know, and I can be honest and say I was called about 3 or 4 months before my husband died, and the nominations chair, I was so kind of, you know, surprised and honored to be invited to do this. And the wave that came over my mind right then was thinking, I am going to be alone at some time. Yes, I want to be associated with this great group of people. I will have more time, and I'm going to be, you know, communicating and working with just, you know, a wonderful, high quality, interesting group of people. And that's certainly the way it's been. And I can't say enough about the relationships and people that I have associated with at Better Investing's home office, as well as the community. I mean, we're all part of the community. So,
wow. What, you know, thank you so much for sharing that. And what comes to mind is you were able to be so fortunate because of communication and preparation. And I'm so happy, Eve, that you were willing to share your story on hashtag My Investing Story. I mean, because, you know, for a lot of us, we don't talk about money at home, or we're not exposed to other people that know intelligently how to talk about money, or how specifically how to invest successfully. And so that is really why we, you know, do this show, do this podcast, because a lot of people want the information, and exactly what you said, they just need to connect with other people to see how they did it. And I think that, you know, for us serving, leading by example, I just want to say thank you so much for being a wonderful Better Investing member, a wonderful volunteer serving on the national board for over, 10 years?
Yeah, over 10 years. Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you so much, Eve. Do you have any last words or things you want to, you know, share, close us out with?
I just like to say thank you so much for having me. And I guess what I can say is if anybody knows Ione's story of going to a Better Investing National Convention and going to a youth investing seminar, I was there and she was 9 years old. And I'm just so pleased.
Thank you for keeping the record.
And so, you know, and thank you. I mean, I'm glad that influence, that basic influence, has now grown into, you know, your life's work and your commitment, and you are living proof that our philosophy works.
Right. And the younger the better.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So. Right. So thank you. No, I wish everyone well, and better investing.
Yes, better investing. Again, check us out on betterinvesting.org. Visit us at our national convention, which is going to be June 23rd through the 26th. And if you want to reach out to me, go to betterinvesting.org and visit the South Florida chapter. We have a model club. We have educational events. And you can reach out to me directly through. So, Eve, thank you so much. Again.
You're welcome. And thank you for your leadership in the South Florida chapter.
Yes. Well, thank you. It's a pleasure. And it's a pleasure to serve with you on the national board.
Same. Uh-huh. And glad we have. Ione has brought down the average age on the board considerably.
By what, 20 years?
But you know, seriously, it's great to have younger people to attract younger people. And younger people can relate to you. So,
well, I'm looking forward to the future of better investing. I think
we've got at least another 70 years ahead.
Why not? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again, Eve. And thank you to everybody that showed up.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.